Now let's come to order, folks. It's town hall tonight.
Smiles in Town Hall tonight, folks. 60 minutes of fun and music brought to you by Ipana Toothpaste and Sal Hepatica. Ipana for the smile of duty, Sal Hepatica for the smile of health. Fun with our star comedian Fred Allen, music with Peter Van Steeden. New songs, new laughs. It's Town Hall tonight! Well, sir, all the regular old Town Hallites are here to take up the business of the evening, folks. Peter Van Steeden makes a motion to start the overture, and it's Who Blew Out the Flame?
Why did we? What happened to the love in your heart? Darling, suddenly how shallowy the world became.
Who blew out the flame?
You kindled the spark. Then you left me all alone in the dark. For without your love, the stars above don't shine the same.
Who blew out the flame?
Stars above don't shine the same. Who blew out the flame?
Who blew out the flame?
And left this yearning in my heart.
And now we present the bony face of the old town hall, a man who really needs no introduction. He may not be the man of the hour, but we're hoping he'll last at least 60 minutes tonight. Fred Allen, in person.
Thank you, Angry. Even with the applause card upside down,
I've been upset all day.
And good evening. If you were upside down and the applause card was right side up, I wouldn't be surprised. Better have it. Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we welcome you to our tumble-down citadel, where tonight you have a rendezvous with fun, we hope.
Say, and Fred.
Not tonight, Harry. We have a very long show. And I just found out something. We can let all the singers go. Listen.
Oh, isn't that pretty?
We don't need the quartet.
Mr. Toscanini find that. He'll have it in the orchestra.
Mr. Toscanini will have this pulled up a half a tone, I'll guarantee. But we have a long show. We have a long show, and we're starting right in with our weekly newsreel. The Town Hall News. Mr. Toscanini would do something about that, too. The Town Hall News sees nothing, shows all. Hollywood, California. The new Screen Actors Guild contract, which went into effect November 1st, limits actors to 48 hours of work a week. Since picture companies must pay for additional hours, studio executives say actors will be forced to punch time clocks. Hollywood is agog. Town Hall News interviews film magnates and actors to get opinions on time clock punching innovation. Montaigne Fink, prominent Hollywood producer, says,
time clocks yet. Bad enough we got producers in Hollywood who can't read, authors who can't write. Now I'm finding for $2,000 a week, I got actors who don't know what time it is.
A business.
A shambles.
And thank you, Mr. Fink.
A suit like you got on, I could get you wholesale.
I can tell that from the pictures you're making, Mr. Fink.
One of Hollywood's outstanding stars, glamorous little Lulu Schlepp, says she will refuse to punch the time clock.
The whole thing is a laugh. In Technicolor. I've been in 4 Gold Diggers pictures. Gold Diggers North, East, West, and some other direction.
Uh-huh.
Now I should start punching the time clock? Well, c'est la vie, if you get what I mean. It's a lot of bull of her.
Laverne Dapple, Hollywood leading man, is noncommittal.
Punching a time clock doesn't worry me. My double actually does everything. In my new picture, Suez, I'm getting all of the notices. My double really dug the canal.
He did? He did.
Yes, doubles do everything in Hollywood, you know. Hollywood even has a drink for doubles.
Really?
Yes, the double malted.
The double malted for doubles.
Is my double there?
Yes, Mr. Dapple.
I have an awfully frightful headache.
I'll lie down right away, sir.
Thank you.
And thank you, Laverne Dapple. To show how the time clock may work out while pictures are in production, Town Hall News takes you now to a soundstage on the 20th Century Fox lot. A scene in the new picture, Debutantes Askew, is being filmed. The scene is on.
You can choose between us, Balsam Sprague.
Mendoza.
It's either me or her.
Mendoza.
I may be only your stenographer, but your wife has got to go.
Mendoza.
Cut! Save the lights, boys. You two are finished.
Throw for the day, Mr. Director.
That's right. Can we go?
Yes, punch the time clock on your way out.
Yes, sir. You first, Miss Tansy.
Thank you.
Let's see. Where's my card? Oh, yeah. Next scene, 201, that death scene. Tallulah.
Right here.
Clark.
All ready, Director.
Balfour.
Champing at the bit. And it is a bit in this scene.
Oh, quit crabbing. You die in the scene. The camera's on you. Now let's run the dialogue, folks.
I am Louis Pasteur.
Right. The husband's dying. His feet are swelling up. The wife hears about this French doctor whose specialty is bad dogs.
I send for him.
It's Louis Pasteur.
Right. Now get in the bed, Balfour. Play the scene slow, everybody. It's drama. Okay, start dying, Balfour.
Courage, darling. You mustn't die.
Not that.
Keep breathing, darling. In, out, in, out.
You sent for Louis Pasteur, madame?
Yes, my husband is dying. It's his dogs.
No.
Why, let me see.
Is it athlete's feet, Dr. Pasteur?
No, it's Bellagra.
Bellagra,
the curse of the tropics.
But he's never been to the tropics.
He might have caught it watching a travelogue. Steady, man, steady.
Is he going?
Yes, he's going. He's gone. Good day.
Great. Okay, folks. Now we'll shoot the scene.
Are you watching the clock?
Oh, don't forget the 48-hour law. Actors can't work overtime.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Well, we just got 2 minutes. Let's go, folks. Give me that death scene again, but speed it up. Lights. Camera, let's go.
Oh.
Courage.
Louis Pasteur.
My.
It's.
Live.
Die.
Oh.
Going.
Going.
Oh.
Gone.
The whistle. No overtime. We're safe.
Oh, we're safe.
Atlantic City, New Jersey. The American hardware manufacturers and the National Wholesale Hardware Associations open a 4-day convention in Atlantic City. Town Hall News, in an effort to bring you the lowdown on current business outlook, interviews leading delegate to the hardware convention. Presenting then, Mr. Baxter Bragg.
Oh, nail and a hammer, a hinge and a saw, hardware dealers, hardware dealer.
Just a minute, Mr. Bragg.
Well, that's the hardware convention chair.
Well, I know, we appreciate it, but we've got some serious business here. Now, how long have you hardware dealers been holding your conventions here in Atlantic City?
Oh, 2 years, 1937 and 1938.
And during the past 2 years, what hardware subjects have been taken up?
Bolts and nuts, mostly.
I see. Last year you took up...
Bolting.
And this year?
Nothing.
Well, things are bad all over, Mr. Bragg.
Princeton, New Jersey. Moritz von Baumhard, a fellow of the Juilliard Graduate School of Music in New York, has been appointed acting director of the Princeton University Glee Club for the forthcoming season. Town Hall News gives brief flash of Princeton Glee Club's opening session.
I don't know. The Princeton Glee Club will come to order. All right, fellas, let's have some glee. Thank you.
Broadway, New York. One of the outstanding hit shows to open during the 1938 New York theatrical season is Miss Claire Booth's hilarious satire at the Henry Miller Theater, appropriately titled Kiss the Boys Goodbye. Town Hall News presents a 4-second preview of Miss Booth's hit show, Kiss the Boys Goodbye.
Hey, how about kissing a boys goodbye, sis?
You bet. Gosh, who are you boys?
The Flatbush Lodge of Elks, lady.
New York City, New York. Mayor Edward J. Kelly of Chicago, who bet Mayor LaGuardia that Chicago Cubs would defeat New York Yankees in World Series, paid his bet last week. To settle sporting debt, Mayor Kelly sends 500-pound pig to New York City Hall. Town Hall news shows enormous porker arriving. The scene, Mayor LaGuardia's office.
Oh, here's that big ham, Mayor.
Well, come right in, Mr. Allen.
Thank you. And now the Merrimacks, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight they sing for us, Jeannie with the Light Brown Hair.
I dream of Jeannie with the light brown hair, born like a vapor on the summer air. I see her tripping where the bright streams play, happy as a daisy's that day. Voice would pour. Many were the blithe birds that warbled them o'er. I dream of Jeannie with the light brown hair, floating like a vapor on the soft summer air. I long for Jeannie with a gay dawn smile. I love my Jeannie with the light brown hair. I hear her melodies like joys gone by. I love my Jeannie with the light brown hair, sighing like the night wind and sobbing like the rain, wailing for the lost one that comes not again, 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 again. I sigh for Jeannie with the light brown hair, floating on the summer air, on the soft summer air.
This is Jeannie with the light down here.
As our panna troubadours have just returned to their seats after finishing. Did you hear that little applause towards the end? That was Peter applauding himself. Oh. He always does. Have just returned to their seats after finishing the Lambeth Walk. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I know you didn't expect to meet.
And who is it tonight, Fred?
Well, tonight we're going to learn something about Radio City, Harry.
Oh, good.
You know, you and I come in here every Monday to rehearse. Where?
On the 8th floor.
Uh-huh. Wednesday nights, we come back and do the program where?
On the 8th floor.
Now, you and I have been coming into this building for 5 years, and where have we been?
On the 8th floor.
You know, I heard today from a tourist that this building has 65 or 70 floors.
Well, I wouldn't know, Fred. I've only been...
On the 8th floor.
Well, I've been meaning to take one of those NBC tours, you know.
And where tonight we're going to, Harry... For our guest this evening is a guide here in Radio City. He has made hundreds of tours through the building and knows the whereabouts of everything from Shepfield's bubble pipe to the location of the cutting room where they bob and measure those waves for the short wave broadcast. And so tonight, ladies and gentlemen, I know you didn't expect to meet my favorite guide and man about Radio City, Mr. Joseph Allen.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
Good evening, Mr. Allen. Now, Mr. Allen.
Yes, Mr. Allen?
Now, wait a minute. Well, we've got to do something about this Mr. Allen problem. Your name isn't Allen, is it, sir?
No, sir.
Oh, that's Uncle Jim. My gosh, your glasses are getting so bad, Jim, I can't tell you anymore. Well, we've got to do so. This interview is going to sound, with all these Mr. Allens, it's going to sound as though I'm talking to myself and answering myself with a southern dialect.
Well, you have my permission to call me Joe, Mr. Allen.
All right, and how about you calling me Fred, Joe?
It's all right with me, Fred.
Fine. What outpost of the Allen clan do you hail from?
Well, my home is down in North Carolina, Fred. I came from Frog Hollow Junction, to be exact.
Frog Hollow Junction. I have never looked over the map that closely, but I will. North Carolina, that's the northern part of the South, isn't it? Down near the tobacco country.
That's right, Fred.
Well, growing up near tobacco didn't stunt your growth, did it, Joe?
Nope. I'm 6 feet one in my stocking feet.
I must put on stockings sometime and see how tall I am. But enough of this spontaneous hilarity, Joe. Let us return to the business at hand. You are a radio city studio and television guide in good standing.
Having trouble? Yes, Fred, I've been conducting NBC studio tours for 2 years.
Well, I hope you can show me how to get through the script here before we... You've been conducting tours for 2 years, and in that time, how many people do you think you have escorted through our little tower of words and wonders?
Oh, I'd say about 30 or 40,000, Fred.
Would you realize, Joe, that you had a bigger following last year than most of the radio comedians? And I must say, you guides look a lot better than the comedians in those snappy uniforms.
Well, we try to lend tone and dignity to the edifice at all times, Fred.
And what is that red braid on your shoulder there, on your left shoulder?
The red braid shows I'm a television guide.
Oh, I see. The guides in the various departments have different colored braids.
Yes, a page boy has a blue braid, and a studio guide a white one. The assistant supervisor is wearing gold. I'm going to need some help myself.
Well, the... I'll do the best I can for you, Joe. The assistant supervisors wear gold, you say. The vice presidents, I imagine, wear mess jackets to match their minds, of course. I met the vice president in charge of Dixie Cups today. He was wearing a new waxed beret. You know, it's a funny thing, Joe. Every big business today is teeming with vice presidents. But it only takes one to run the country.
Well, that's life, Fred.
Life. Schopenhauer says, life is an unprofitable episode that disturbs an otherwise blessed state of non-existence.
You know, I've never heard his program.
Schopenhauer? Schopenhauer was on Sustaining for years. Under the name of Pick and Pat, I think. But... Tell me, Uncle Joe. Uncle Joe. Well, there's my eyes. My convergence is bad. I see Uncle Jim's head on your uniform there. Tell me, Joe, how do you fellas manage to stand up so straight on duty all week? You take a starch transfusion every Monday?
No, it's just practice, Fred. That soon becomes a habit.
Well, just a habit. Some of the boys look so stiff, I can't tell whether it's over-efficiency or rigor mortis setting in.
Standing erect is part of the guest relations tradition, Fred.
I know, but traditions change, Joe. I've noticed lately that page boys don't salute and click their heels when they speak to me.
Well, the military style was discarded about 2 years ago.
I knew that something had happened. I haven't heard two heels click in here since the day I bumped into another comedian on the 8th floor.
That wasn't Van Steeden, was it?
No. No, he's an apprentice comedian. He's coming along briskly, Joe. But tell me, how many boys are in your NBC brigade?
Oh, about 150 of them all together.
And where are they from?
All over the country. Practically everyone is a college man. We even have our own football team here, Fred.
Well, how is the guide's team going this fall?
Great so far. Last week we beat the announcers 13-0.
Say, if you were... Well, of course, if they had a tobacco auctioneer for quarterback, they would be a little upset. But if you boys... If you boys are that good, you can probably rent your team to Yale. I hear... I hear that three Saturdays ago, some team phoned in and beat Yale 6-0. But, I dally, Joseph. Now tell me, when a tourist comes here to visit the NBC studios in Radio City, what can he or she expect to see?
Well, Fred, there are two main tours. One of them is through the radio studios, and the other gives a preview of television.
What does the radio tour include?
We go through the radio studios and also explain the functions of each department here in the company.
Do you give your parties a sample broadcast?
No, but we do demonstrate how sound effects are made.
Do any unexpected highlights ever crop up on your tours?
Sure. Occasionally we pass radio stars in the halls and I point them out to the party.
Say, don't ever point me out, Joe. Last spring, a guide pointed me out to a party taking a tour. One woman complained and got a 15-cent refund. But what other sights do folks see?
The giant Radio City air conditioning plant.
Yes.
And another exhibit is a setup of large cathode ray tubes that show how the electrical waves are converted into sound in the radio sets.
Well, that is the studio tour. Now, what about the television tour?
The progress of television is fully explained. First, there's an exhibit of early equipment.
Yes.
Then we go to adjoining studios, and one of them contains the latest model home television sets, and the other is a small television broadcasting studio.
Well, do you give an actual television broadcast from one room to the other?
Yes, we divide each party into two groups, and that enables them, that's right, isn't it?
And that's right, them, if they're still with you. But are the television pictures distinct?
They compare favorably with the average 8x10-inch picture you'd see in the newspapers.
Say, when television comes in, you know, I may turn out to be a coast-to-coast boogeyman. When Harry says, here he comes now, 20 million kiddies around the country will scurry into closets.
Well, don't worry, Fred. A nationwide hookup in television is undoubtedly a long way off.
Well, say, how does static work in television? Would I come out with three noses or six ears? Or perhaps good-looking if the static was real bad?
Well, television isn't magic. You know, it works on high frequencies, and static really is a minor factor there.
Well, when do you think the average man can expect television in his home?
Well, no one knows exactly, Fred, but when the World's Fair opens next May, practical television will be in operation in the New York area. But nationwide televising will probably take some time.
Well, that's good enough for me, and thank you a lot for this little verbal jaunt around the premises, Joe. Now, how much does one of your tours cost?
The studio tour is 55 cents, and for 90 cents, the television tour is included.
Say, Joe, do you realize that our little siesta of fat chewing tonight might bring back prosperity?
How, Fred?
Well, every man, woman, and child listening to us tonight has saved 90 cents. Now, with that money in their pockets, they can start a boom. The small merchant will be flooded with business. Heavy industry will be swamped with new orders. Why, if the stores are still open, recovery may be consummated tonight. How does that sound to you, Joe?
Well, there's only one thing worrying me, Fred.
What?
How do I get out of here?
Well, there's a guide over there, Joe. Just follow him.
Thanks, Fred, and good night.
And thank you, and good night, Joseph Allen. And now the town hall singers slip out of vocal dry dock to sing Steamboat Bill.
Mississippi steamed the whippoorwill, commanded by the pilot, Mr. Steamboat Bill. The owners gave him orders on a strict QT to try and beat the record of the Robert E. Lee.
Beat them fires, let that old smoke roll.
Burn up all your cargo if you run out of coal. If we don't beat the record, Billy told the mate,
send my mail care Peter to the Golden Gate.
Steamboat Bill steamed down the Mississippi, Steamboat Bill. A mighty man was he. Steamboat Bill steaming down the Mississippi, gonna beat the record of the Robert E. Lee.
Then up stepped the gambler from Louisville.
He tried to get a bet against the whippoorwill.
Billy Fleischer rolled, it surely was not fair.
The boiler, it exploded, blew them up in the air.
The gambler said to Billy as he left the wreck,
I don't know where we're going, but we're neck and neck.
Bill said to the gambler, I'll tell you what I'll do.
I'll bet another thousand I go higher than you.
Steamboat Bill tore up the Mississippi, Steamboat Bill. The river made him swear. Steamboat Bill tore up the Mississippi. The explosion of the boiler got him up in the air.
River's all in mourning now for Steamboat Bill. No more you'll hear the puffing of the whippoorwill. There's crape on every steamboat that plows those streams. From Memphis right
wife of Mr. William was at home in bed when she got the telegram that said, old steamboat's dead. She said to the children,
oh, bless each honey lamb. The next papa you have will be a railroad man.
Steamboat Bill, missing on the Mississippi. Steamboat Bill is with an angel, then hallelujah. Steamboat Bill, missing on the Mississippi. He's a pilot on the ferry in the promised land.
Burst of seasonal exuberance brings you a few impressions of these glorious autumn days. Now you, sir, have you been stepping briskly through the woods, thrilling to nature's color scheme of rust and gold?
Have I been what? Oh, go away. I've got such a cold I can hardly hold my head up.
Then you, miss. I'm sure this invigorating weather has brought a sparkle to your eye and the roses to your cheeks.
All this weather's done for me is to give you a cold in the head, but thanks for asking.
Dear, dear. Well, perhaps we'd better skip the autumnal impressions and see if we can't get a little timely advice. You, Mr. Von Zell.
Yes, gladly, Fred. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm simply passing along the advice of many physicians when I suggest this to everyone who feels a cold coming on. Get after that cold immediately, and with Sal Hepatica. Because Sal Hepatica gets after your cold in two effective ways. It not only clears away accumulated wastes quickly yet gently, but in addition, this sparkling mineral salt laxative also helps nature counteract acidity, which so often accompanies a cold. So get a bottle of Sal Hepatica from any druggist before you go to bed tonight and follow the directions. Then you're taking a mighty wise step in fighting the cold that is threatening you. Show your whole family the way to better health with Sal Hepatica. Gentlemen, Town Hall tonight will continue immediately after a brief pause for your station identification.
Cedar Van Steeden and his Ipana Troubadours have just played... What is it, Troubadours? What are you laughing at, Mr. Van Steeden? You want the other R in it this month? You and oysters must have your R. Peter Van Steeden and his Ipana Troubadours.
A few bars of Says My Heart from the song of the same name. Now, on Friday night, there...
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello, Portland. Say, I didn't recognize you at first. What's going on there under your hat?
Oh, my new hairdo?
Your hairdo?
Uh-huh.
Is your hair supposed to stick up that way? I thought you'd just seen a mouse or something.
Oh, everybody's wearing their hair up. It's the latest style.
Well, so I hear. I saw a woman on Fifth Avenue today. Her hair was pulled up so tight, her mouth kept flying open.
Well, that's the new... Sweep. It shows the ears.
Shows the ears. All summer, women have been going around with toes hanging out of their shoes. Now it's the ears hanging out of their hair.
Oh, a girl has to be in style, doesn't she?
What style? Most of those high hair combs look like pompadours with a slow leak.
All I know is my hairdresser is jammed.
You mean women's husbands are trying to get in there to get at her?
No, she's invented a new hairdo.
Oh, a new hairdo. Hmm? Well, how does she comb it?
She doesn't use a comb.
Oh.
You just let your hair down, and she sticks it in the electric fan.
Yeah?
Then the hairdresser turns off the fan, and however your hair is snarled, that's your hairdo.
Oh, boy, you can do that at home, can't you?
Uh-huh.
Hi, folks.
Hi, party.
You're just in time, boys.
No, what,
is Fred off again?
Yes. He's picking on my hairdo, Harry.
What? Why, your hair looks swell, Porty.
Chic isn't the word. Where did you get it done?
At Francois Salon.
Francois does my hair, too.
Francois? Why, I thought you just leaned down and let the dog play with your hair and grabbed your baton and came on down to work.
Oh, yeah?
Why, the top of your head looks like a blowout in a sofa. Now, see? That's your head. That's radio. Your head is getting a reception. Now we know there's nothing in the whole thing.
You ought to get your face lifted, Alan. Your neck's got more personality.
Now watch that vindictive ad-libbing, Van Steeden, that you studied all afternoon. Why... I'm apt to pull your top lip down and squeegee the front of that dickie.
Yeah? Where are you going to get three men in a hurry?
Who needs three men? Why, I ought to reach up and pull your spine out from under your coat and cane you with it.
You do, and I'll slump down and spread all over you.
You think he'd be better blackened up if we... Monkey around. Look, I can get a Victrola and a set of Bennett Up My Orchestra with two little clasps.
One more sully innuendo that concerns my orchestra, Alan, and...
Your orchestra. Take the instruments away from your band, and what have you got? Any corner in Ellis Island. Come in.
Cablegram for Mr. Allen.
Hi, Mr. Allen, boy.
Then I won't wait for a tip.
That boy is a mind reader.
Yeah, and I read palms, too.
Aggressive little moppet, isn't he?
Aren't you going to read your cablegram, Mr. Allen?
Oh, yes, I'll open it up. It's probably from one of the Cliveden set. Well, what do you know?
Is it good news, Mr. Allen?
Is it? Listen to this. Dublin, Ireland. Your horse just came in the Irish sweepstakes.
What? Well, the race was run last Wednesday, Fred.
I know, but my horse just finished.
You don't win anything, do you, Mr. Allen?
No, but think of the load it takes off my mind. I've been worried about the jockey. Now, suppose he hadn't taken enough provisions to last him for the race.
Stewart's me, Mr. Harlan.
Now, see, who is this little man? See here, little man. If you are mendicant-minded...
Oh, could you please...
Here. Up. If you want something for a cup of coffee, old boy, you'll find two lumps of sugar in my coat.
No. I am playing cornet with the orchestra. Excuse it, please.
Now, don't apologize for only a fragment of the band. What is it you want, little man?
Please, could I speak with Maestro von Steeden?
If you don't care what becomes of you socially, it's all right to Mendoza with him.
Peter!
Yes, Porty?
There's a man here.
No, a little man. Qualifying.
A little man,
Peter.
You might
be expecting a big man.
Oh, what is it, Carl?
Please, Maestro von Steeden, could I be excused?
Anything wrong, Carl?
Yeah, I just remembered I left my coat downstairs in the restaurant.
What do you want to do, run down and get it?
Yeah, 5 minutes only, I will be gone.
You'll miss the next number, Carl.
I know. Just get the tasket. The cornet has only 3 notes. I wouldn't be missed. My overcoat will.
Go ahead. Get your coat.
Wait a minute, Alan. This is a union matter.
Oh. Himmel. Always the union.
If you don't play those 3 notes, Carl, you know the union rules. Clause 7?
Clause 7. Yeah, again, I am fine.
Right.
Well, then I stay. Better I should lose the coat.
Now, wait a minute. I'm no John L., boys. But I can straighten this thing out. If Carl doesn't play those 3 notes in a tisket, a tasket, he's fine. Is that it?
Right.
But the union doesn't say he has to play them at any particular time, does it?
No special minute, no.
As long as the 3 notes are played during the program.
Yes.
Carl?
Yeah, Mr. Harlan.
What are we waiting for?
I'm catching on. Danke schön. Goodbye.
Gad, with those 3 notes missing, a tisket, a tasket is ruined.
Gee, if I ever forget my coat, the whole program will be ruined.
Look, all of you, there is only one man who can forget anything that will stop this program.
The sponsor?
If he forgets the option, it's every man for himself. Who is this? Who is
Come
this?
Come in!
Bring him right in here, Sam.
Yeah.
Sit him down over there.
Yeah.
Hey, what is that lumber they're dumping in here?
Gosh, they look like doors, Mr. Allen.
Doors is right. Where's Allen?
Well, I'm Allen.
Fine. I'm from the Society for the Protection of People Who Have to Listen to Radio Comedians, Allen.
And?
I'm calling on you radio clowns one by one.
Now, never mind the social angle. What about these doors you've dumped in here?
The Society for the Protection of People Who Have to Listen to Radio Comedians is taking up the matter of doors.
Doors on radio programs?
Right. You, Benny, Cantor, Haley, and all the rest of them are using too many doors.
Well, I...
A door opens, a voice says, what has one neck and flies?
Yes.
The comedian says, a molasses jug in July, and the door slams.
But there's generally a laugh on those other programs when it happens. So what?
Well, as long as you radio comedians are all using the same jokes, the least you could do...
is use different doors.
Right.
Well, I get it. The door slams, then, on all of the programs. They're going to sound different after this.
Well, something ought to sound different.
Well, it might help.
Okay, I'll audition these four doors, and you pick out the one you want.
Okay.
Now, here's number one.
No. That door leaves me cold.
Okay, here's number two.
Isn't even trying.
Number three.
Now, that door has no personality.
Well, how's this?
That's my door.
Okay. Now, which way is Benny?
Go west until you come to Sunday night.
Okay, so long.
Portland.
I know. The door.
Thank you. And now the Merrimacks take a vocal peek into the past and sing Long, Long Ago.
Tell me the tale that to me were so dear. Long, long ago, long, long ago. Sing me the songs I delighted to hear. Long, long ago, long ago. Now you are come, oh, my grief is removed. Let me forget that so long you have roved. Let me believe that you love and you love. Long, long ago, long ago. Da 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 ra ra ti do da da ti do do do. Da 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 ra ra ti do da ti do. Tell me the tale that used to be all so dear to me. Long, long ago, long ago. Sing me the song that used to be so delightful to hear. Long, long ago, so long ago. Now you are come. All my sorrow is gone, my grief is removed. Let me forget that you have been away from me too long, too long. Let me believe that you love me as you love me. Long, 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 long ago.
Playing a game of solitaire, here's my heart. Come on,
take it. Only promise you won't break it. Don't cross your fingers, cross your heart.
Edith DeVanstead and the Ipana Troubadours and the Town Hall Singers have just completed Don't Cross Your Fingers. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we present that touring rogues gallery come to life, the Mighty Allen Art Players. Tonight, these Bowery Barrymores look into the almanac and pay tribute to the month of November. November, month of harvest and Thanksgiving. Opening our almanac to November, we are first impressed by the part this month has played in the development of America. Little did the early settlers suspect how greatly their customs and institutions would be changed by 1938. November still is harvest month, but the first farmers had more corn in their barns than you'll find in a year of Peter Van Steeden's music. The pilgrims who landed from the Mayflower reaped their first harvest in November 1621. Pilgrim farmers rejoiced. Scenes like this in houses were common in Plymouth.
Verily, good wife, my toil is done.
You have harvested, good husband.
Yea, reap 200 acres with Miles Standish and an Indian.
The earth has been most bountiful.
Yea, such treasures, corn, oats, and barley, safely stored.
Oh, husband.
Yea, wife?
A strange sound cometh from the barn.
Ah, the very grain rejoiceth.
The grain thumpeth?
Yea, it be a bumper crop.
That was the first harvest. But oh, how different today. The 1938 harvest finds a different type of farmer returning from his fields.
Well, let's finish, Ma.
You're through harvesting, Paul?
Yeah, covered 200 acres with 3 certified accountants.
What didn't you grow this year?
Biggest crop I ain't growed under this administration.
Whee, some not planting.
Yeah, 50 acres of no corn, 75 acres of no oats, and a cool 25 acres of no barley. Come in.
I'm from Washington. How much didn't you grow?
200 acres.
That's $3,000. Here's your check.
Our almanac says here, it was in November 1752 that Benjamin Franklin first suspected electricity. He stood with a neighbor in a backyard in Philadelphia flying his kite. The night was stormy. Rain beat against Franklin's face. The neighbor, fearing Franklin might go down in history all wet, spoke.
Your experiment is hopeless, Benjamin. Let us go indoors.
Nay, another minute, neighbor. Look, the kite string sputters.
Eureka! Electricity! Did you see it, neighbor?
See what, Benjamin?
The flash! This flash will revolutionize America!
That was in 1752. What would Benjamin Franklin say today if he could hear the flash of 1938?
Flash! What role in what picture called Gone with the What is going to be played by Catherine Watt? Flash!
Turning another page of our almanac, it says, in November 1823, John Howard Payne wrote Home Sweet Home. This song has maintained its sentimental hold on our hearts and tested the larynx of every tenor singer for over 100 years. Home Sweet Home was written in London by John Howard Payne, an American who is homesick for his native land. The song was first sung in a London theatrical manager's office.
My new song is finished, Mr. Campbell.
Fine, John. What type of song is it?
Wait, I'll sing it for you.
Mid pleasures and palaces, though we may roam.
That was in 1823. In 1938, Home Sweet Home is still being sung. The author would be aghast if he could hear the Merrimack sing his Home Sweet Home today.
Great pleasures and palaces, though we may roam, be it ever so humble, there's no place like home.
Here, our almanac says November 1869 found the Union Pacific Lines completing the first transcontinental railroad. In November, the first passenger train left the Cheyenne, Wyoming depot.
Pull aboard!
In 1938, the new streamlined Zephyr train passes through Cheyenne. People at the depot today often say,
"Stand back, everybody! Here she was."
On this page, our almanac reads, November 1873 saw the famous Hoosick Tunnel opened at a cost of $20 million, which was thought to be prohibitive. But that was back in 1873. The day the tunnel opened, its cost was the sole topic of conversation. When two persons met on the street, they were sure to say,
"Here the Hoosack Tunnel opens today."
"Yep, cost $20 million.
$20 million for part of the tunnel?"
"Nope, $20 million for the whole."
Today, in 1938, the Hoosick Tunnel is rarely mentioned except on occasionally on radio programs. Only last week, a leading radio comedy team said,
"Hoosack Tunnel, I seen you with last night."
"That was no tunnel. That was my wife. She's a bore."
Yet again, our almanac shows that in November 1876, the first long-distance phone call in the history of the world was made between Boston and Salem, Massachusetts. The mayor of Boston called the head of the telephone company in Salem. Telephone history was to be made in the mayor's office that day. The mayor jiggled the hook.
"Is this procedure correct, Miss Wilkins?"
"Yes. The directions say, jiggle the hook and say distinctly, operator."
"Operator?"
"Number, please."
"This is the mayor of Boston. I'm calling the president of the telephone company in Salem. It's Salem 0000.
"You're making history, Mr. Mayor."
"Never mind my private life. Get me that number."
"I will ring your party."
"Gad, what a day for science, Miss Wilkins."
"Yes, Your Honor. What are you going to say?"
"Oh, something short. It's got to go down in history."
"Have you chosen a sentence?"
"Yes, I'm just going to say, what miracle hath science wrought?"
"Those will be the first words spoken over the telephone."
"What miracle?"
"Mr. Mayor."
"Yes?"
"Here is your party."
"Oh, hello." "What miracle hath science wrought?" "What miracle hath science wrought?"
"I wouldn't know, friend. This is ye city morgue."
"The morgue?"
"You sound pretty far gone, friend. Lie down. We'll be right over."
"Why, you..."
"Number, dear."
"This is the mayor of Boston. I'm calling Salem. Oh, 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 oh."
"You're groaning. Do you want an ambulance?"
"No, no, no. Oh, 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 oh's the number. It's Salem."
"Excuse us, please. I will ring your party."
"Making history is not easy, Miss Wilkins."
"Are you sure this talking device has been invented, Your Honor?"
"Here is your party."
"Oh, here we are."
"Hello?"
"What miracle hath science wrought?"
"We can use a miracle."
"Who is this?"
"The Republican Club."
"Number, please."
"What miracle? I mean, you gave me the wrong number."
"Your number is Salem O Ditto, double ditto."
"Yes."
"Here is your party." "Hello?"
"What miracle hath science wrought?"
"Talking English, kindly."
"Is this Salem?"
"This is Betsy Greenbaum, hostess at ye old Betsy Greenbaum combination White Horse Tavern and Red Hot Cookies to Take Out Incorporated. The slogan is, looky, 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 it's a Greenbaum cookie."
"Operator, operator!"
"Don't give up, Your Honor."
"If I get Salem, I'll give them a piece of my mind."
"Your sentence will sound better."
"Oh, sentence be..."
"Hello, Mr. Mayor."
"Yes."
"Here is Salem, O-O-O-O."
"Oh, hello."
"Nuts to you."
"Why, you dirty wig! Who is this?"
"The Eureka Nut Shoppy. Nuts for all occasions. Nuts to you."
That was in November 1876. And believe it or not, that first phone call has yet to be completed. Up in Boston to this very day, a little old man, long out of office, sits in a furnished room by his phone. With a frail, trembling, unmanicured finger, he still jiggles the hook.
Operator, operator.
Number, please.
Salem, oh.
Are you the mayor of Boston?
I was when I put in this call.
Oh, my grandmother told me about you. She took your first number 62 years ago.
I know. I'm still trying to get that party.
This generation will get it for you.
I hope so.
Here is your party. Hello?
This the president of the phone company in Salem?
Yep, who's he?
I used to be the mayor of Boston.
I thought you was going to call me up.
Well, I've been calling you. It turned out to be my life's work.
I'm waiting to hear from you. It's been mine. Aren't you supposed to say something for history?
I was, but I forget the sentence. Something about a miracle.
What miracle? A giant rock.
What miracle? After 62 years, I finally got the right number. That's the miracle.
In the back of every almanac, you're sure to find household hints, recipes, and vital statistics. Many famous men were born in November. November 20th.
Francis Bacon born.
November 21st.
Robert Fulton born.
November 22nd.
H.V. Calton born. For further details, see your local newspaper.
It is during November, too, that we celebrate Armistice Day. On November 11th, 1918, leading world diplomats signed the treaty. The spokesman at the diplomats' parley said,
"This has been a war to end wars. Democracy is saved."
Today, November 2nd, 1938, we hear,
"The world will spend billions to arm. Democracy must be saved."
Turning the last page of our almanac, we find in November 1623, the first Thanksgiving Day was celebrated. The Pilgrim Fathers hunted the woods in rain and snow, suffering untold hardships until every Plymouth family had its turkey. And so then, as we close our almanac, let us all give thanks that today we are not forced to pilgrim extremes to get our Thanksgiving turkeys. In 1938, we simply stroll to a little box, turn the dial, and when we hear
"Chillow again,"
we know that the bird will follow any minute. another symphony concert by Mr. Van Steeden on Wednesday night.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.